Welcome to the Improve the News podcast for Thursday, August 11th, 2022, where we separate the spin from the facts. I'm Adam Clark.
And I'm Eric Steiner with today's top stories. A court rules that the House can obtain Trump's tax returns.
Taiwan begins live fire drills as China extends its war games and withdraws its promise not to send troops.
Three Palestinians are killed during an Israeli West Bank raid.
Zelensky says the war must end with Crimea liberated, while at least 13 are killed in Dnipropetrovsk.
Trump takes the fifth in a New York probe.
The January 6th committee meets with Pompeo and Mastriano.
Biden signs a bill to boost microchip production.
The Department of Justice is reportedly planning an antitrust lawsuit against Google.
And a grand jury declines to indict a woman over Emmett Till's murder.
And in our first story today, an appeals court has ruled that the House of Representatives can obtain Trump's tax returns. And here are the facts, brought to us by CNN, Forbes, USA Today, Business Insider, and Daily Cause. A unanimous three-judge panel for the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit ruled Tuesday that the House Ways and Means Committee can obtain several years of former President Trump's tax returns. The court affirmed a December 2021 district judge's ruling, which dismissed Trump's lawsuit that looked to block the Treasury Department from complying with the committee's request. Trump's tax returns have been sought since 2019. Appeals Judge David Sintel wrote that the committee's request did not violate separation of powers principles, and that Trump's concerns about some of his private financial information being made public didn't outweigh the requests. The decision by the court was made one day after Trump's residence at his Mar-a-Lago resort in Florida was searched by the FBI.
Thanks, Adam, for the facts from that story. And we have pulled the spins from the sources, and we begin with the Democratic narrative coming from CBS. This is a victory in a years-long battle, and it proves that not even a former president is above the law. While Trump's legal team will likely appeal the decision, this is a step in the right direction to bringing transparency and counteracting Trump's suspicious attempts to block the release of his tax returns.
And of course, there's a pro-Trump narrative brought to us by Washington Times. Democrats are still on a baseless mission to find something Trump is hiding in his tax returns. But if the regularly audited Trump had violated any laws, wouldn't the IRS have already prosecuted him? There's no legislative purpose to Congress's request, and Trump is still under no obligation to release his returns.
There's a statistics-based nerd narrative saying there's a 15% chance that Donald Trump will be jailed or incarcerated before 2030, and that comes from the meticulous prediction community.
The question is, what is he going to be jailed for?
You know what? It's anyone's guess. As we turn our attention to Taiwan, as they begin live fire drills as China extends war games. And here are the facts as provided by Al Jazeera, Guardian, Washington Post, CNN, and Newsweek. On Tuesday, Taiwan's armed forces launched drills simulating defensive operations against an invasion on the island as China's Eastern Theater Command extended exercises near Taiwan that were first expected to end on Sunday. While a military spokesperson asserted that Taiwan's defensive drills are part of its previously scheduled annual military war games, the island's foreign minister, Joseph Wu, accused China of preparing to attack the nation. Wu claimed that the PLA, China's People's Liberation Army, has been threatening Taiwan for years by carrying out war games and cyber attacks, launching missiles, and imposing trade sanctions to undermine public morale. This comes as tensions have mounted after U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi visited Taiwan, despite Beijing voicing its opposition to the trip. China responded by reaffirming its sovereignty claims over the self-ruling island. Announcing shortly after her trip, Beijing's drills have involved the first-ever launch of ballistic missile over Taiwan. The simulation of a blockade of Taiwanese ports, anti-submarine warfare, and air superiority combat. On Monday, Taiwan alleged that 21 Chinese aircrafts had crossed the median line, an unofficial border not recognized by Beijing.
Thank you, Eric. Our anti-China narrative is brought to us by Newsweek. China is threatening to disrupt peace in the Indo-Pacific region with its provocative military drills around Taiwan. Beijing is attempting to routinize military exercises in the strait, something Taipei can't allow to happen. The autonomously ruled island has a right to exist and is justified in doing whatever is needed to protect its independence.
Thanks, Adam. Global Times is giving us the pro-China narrative. China's exercises are necessary to both prepare the Chinese military for any potential engagement initiated by the U.S. and push forward the reunification process. China has every right to assert itself over its own sovereign territory of Taiwan, and the U.S. is playing with fire by disregarding its previous diplomatic agreements with China.
And there's also a nerd narrative attached to this story. There's a 25% chance that China will launch a full-scale invasion of Taiwan before 2030, and that's according to the Metaculous Prediction Community. And continuing with news out of Taiwan, China withdraws its promise not to send troops. And here are the facts as agreed upon by Reuters, Express, and Forbes. According to an official Chinese document released on Wednesday, China has withdrawn its pledge not to send troops or administrators to Taiwan if it takes control of the island, a promise previously included in the 1993 and 2000 white papers. The updated document is titled The Taiwan Question and China's Reunification in the New Era. The new era is often associated with President Xi's rule, who is expected to secure a third term as China's president later this year. The document repeated a previous proposal of one country, two systems, which said Taiwan could retain some of its sovereignty and democratic systems upon reunification with China, similar to how Hong Kong is ruled. Previous documents also included a line saying anything can be negotiated, as long as Taiwan accepts that there is only one China and doesn't seek independence. This line is also removed from the most recent document. The publication comes in the wake of China's recent military drills surrounding Taiwan, in response to U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's trip to the island, with Beijing accusing the U.S. of meddling in its internal affairs. The Chinese military's Eastern Theater Command has since announced the end of its ongoing drills, but unveiled plans to conduct regular patrols near the island.
Thank you, Adam, for the facts from that story. Two opposing spins have emerged, and a pro-China narrative is coming from Global Times. The political landscape has changed since the previous white papers were released, and this is a much-needed update to address the current tensions. The new document isn't a threat, but rather makes clarifications about what circumstances would require China to use force, and reaffirms the goal of reunifying China and Taiwan using peaceful measures.
And once again, we have an anti-China narrative, and this time it's brought to us by ABC. If China truly cared about Taiwan's political autonomy, it wouldn't be scratching the promises it made in its previous white papers. The removal of its pledge not to send troops, coupled with the recent military drills in the Taiwan Strait, serve as a warning that the sovereign state and its Western allies should prepare to defend the island from a likely invasion.
Three Palestinians have been killed during an Israeli West Bank raid. And here are the facts as agreed upon by Haaretz, CNN, Times of Israel, Al Jazeera, and Jerusalem Post. On Tuesday, three Palestinians were killed as Israeli forces carried out a military operation in the city of Nablus in the West Bank. Following a gunfight, at least another 40 people were injured. Four are reportedly in a critical condition. The deceased were identified as 16-year-old Hussein Jamal Taha and two militants named Islam Sabu and Ibrahim al-Nabulsi. Al-Nabulsi, who was wanted by Israeli security forces and an Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigades commander, was the main target of the raid that surrounded his home. He had avoided being captured and reportedly survived several assassination attempts in the past, managing to attend funerals in February and in July. Al-Nabulsi reportedly refused to surrender prior to the gunfight. Though no Israeli troops were wounded in the Nablus clashes, a counter-terrorism unit trained dog was killed. Meanwhile in Gaza, a ceasefire between Israel and the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, or PIJ group, has been in effect since Sunday, following a steep escalation of tensions over the weekend.
Thank you, Eric, for laying out the facts on that story. Our first spin is the pro-Israel narrative, and it's provided by Jerusalem Post. This operation proved once again the Israeli commitment and determination to fighting terrorism. Al Nabulsi was a wanted terrorist who took part in several attacks against military positions in the West Bank and at Joseph's Tomb. His neutralization will make the nation safer.
Thank you, Adam. Middle East Eye is giving us the pro-Palestine spin. Al Nabulsi has become a martyr, and his example could well inspire other Palestinians to resist occupation forces. Israel must be aware that its campaign of aggression against Palestinians, which has claimed 129 lives so far this year, can only provoke more clashes and lead to an open conflict.
And the Metaculous Prediction community is providing us with a nerd narrative for this story. There is a 5% chance that Israel and Palestine will hold peace talks in 2022. Eric, turning our attention to the Ukraine and the tragedy happening there, we are at day 168, and here's the roundup. War must end with Crimea, Zelensky says. At least 13 have died in Dnipropetrovsk. And here are the facts as agreed upon by the Washington Post, Al Jazeera, Pravda, and Guardian. After huge blasts rocked a Russian airbase in Crimea on Tuesday, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said, "This Russian war against Ukraine and against the entire free Europe began with Crimea and must end with Crimea, with its liberation. Today, it is impossible to say when this will happen, but we are constantly adding to the necessary components." Zelensky didn't say who was responsible for the blast, although Ukrainian officials initially denied striking the Saki airbase in Novofedorivka and suggested instead it could be the work of local saboteurs or a result of Russian mismanagement. An anonymous Ukrainian official said on Wednesday that Ukraine's special forces were responsible for the attack. Russia's defense military said that there had been no attack and that the blasts were caused by the detonation of several aviation ammunition stores. An unnamed Kremlin source told Russia outlet TASS the primary cause of the explosions appeared to be a violation of fire safety requirements. One person was killed, and 14 more were injured. Meanwhile, Petro Kotin, the head of Ukraine's state-owned nuclear energy company Energotum, said Russia had started to implement its plans of disconnecting the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant from the Ukrainian power grid, instead connecting it to the Russian grid in Crimea. Russia annexed Crimea in 2014, and its airbase has supported Russian attacks in southern Ukraine throughout the current conflict. In Dnipropetrovsk, the region north of Zaporizhia, at least 13 civilians were killed, and 12 more were injured in Russian rocket strikes on the city of Nikopol and nearby Marhanits and Mirova on Wednesday. Officials said 10 people were taken to the hospital and that 7 were in critical condition. Meanwhile, in its daily briefing, officials from the Donetsk People's Republic, or the DPR, said 2 civilians had been killed and 25 more were injured as a result of Ukrainian shelling of territory the DPR controls.
Thank you for the facts of that story, Adam. And the established anti-Russian narrative is being provided by National Security Archive. This invasion is an egregious violation of international law. Putin's ultimate aim is to restore the Soviet Empire, even if it takes massive bloodshed and false pretexts, such as calling the 2014 Ukrainian Revolution after an election a coup. This unprovoked attack is the latest chapter in Putin's Orwellian attempt to rewrite history.
And the continued pro-Russian narrative supplied by the National Security Archive. NATO and the U.S. have ignored Russia's security concerns by breaking its promise not to expand eastward in return for German reunification. These concerns are legitimate, and taking them seriously would have avoided the Ukraine tragedy.
The nerd narrative says there's a 12% chance that Ukraine will officially recognize a former Ukrainian territory as independent before 2024. And that's according to the Metaculous Prediction community. Donald Trump invokes the Fifth Amendment and declines to answer in a New York probe. And here are the facts as provided by The Guardian, CNN, Fox News, and NBC. 2 days after his Florida home was raided by the FBI in a criminal case, former President Trump declined to answer questions under oath on Wednesday in a New York State civil case investigating his business dealings. New York Attorney General Letitia James planned on deposing the former president regarding potential misleading practices by the Trump Organization, but he invoked his Fifth Amendment right not to testify against himself. James is looking into whether Trump improperly inflated the values of assets on financial statements, specifically his property in Westchester, New York, 40 Wall Street in New York City, and Trump Tower, also in New York City. The former president is the latest member of his family to be deposed by James' office, with his two eldest children, Donald Trump Jr. and Ivanka Trump, having testified in late July and last week, respectively. James' office has said their investigation is nearing the end and that they've collected substantial evidence that could lead to a lawsuit. Trump has denied the allegations, saying seeking the best valuation for a property is common practice. Trump has also faced a criminal investigation by the Manhattan DA regarding possible bank, insurance, and tax fraud. The new DA, Alvin Bragg, has since suspended the investigation indefinitely, though a spokesperson says the probe is continuing.
Thank you, Eric, for the facts on that story. And our first narrative is the spin coming from the pro-Trump camp. And it's provided by Fox News. This is a vindictive and self-serving fishing expedition against Trump from James and the Biden administration. For 5 years, all levels of government and the news media have scoured Trump's business dealings, private life, and presidency to no avail. The U.S. Constitution exists to protect individuals from such abuses of power, and Trump rightly used the Fifth Amendment to protect himself from a politically motivated witch hunt.
Thanks, Adam. Politico is giving us the Democratic narrative. This is a seminal moment for James. She finally got the deposition she was looking for and that Trump battled to avoid. Trump is predictably, quote, taking the fifth and painting her investigation as a kangaroo court. As James seeks a second term as New York Attorney General, she will benefit from the continued legal problems engulfing the former president.
And the Metaculous prediction community is predicting that there is an 86% chance that Donald J. Trump will run for the office of President of the United States in 2024. And continuing with news inside the political realm, the January 6th committee has met with Pompeo and Mastriano. And here are the facts as agreed upon by PBS NewsHour, CNN, Time, and the Washington Examiner. The House committee investigating the January 6, 2021 Capitol riots met with former Trump-era Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and Trump-endorsed Pennsylvania GOP gubernatorial nominee Doug Mastriano on Tuesday. Mastriano, a GOP Pennsylvania state senator who was present outside the Capitol on January 6th, was allegedly involved in a plan for his state to submit fake or alternate electors to change the outcome of the 2020 presidential election. Mastriano didn't answer any questions during his virtual session with the committee and ended the interview after 15 minutes. His legal counsel reportedly expressed concern over procedural matters regarding the deposition, as well as the legality of the subpoena from the committee. The committee and federal investigators alike are questioning many Republican officials in several states about an alleged plot by the Trump administration to submit slates of fake electors to stop the historically routine act of certifying the presidential election after Biden had won. Pompeo, believed to be the highest-ranking cabinet member to testify to the committee so far, was interviewed for quite some time, according to committee member Representative Zoe Lofgren, the Democrat out of California. Pompeo's testimony reportedly centered around concerns that Trump officials had about his actions related to January 6th and about potential discussions among cabinet members about invoking the 25th Amendment, which allows for the removal of a sitting president.
Thank you, Adam, for the facts. Let's take a look at the spins from this story. We're going to begin with the Democratic narrative coming from Alternet. The committee's investigation is gaining momentum and accumulating testimony from the highest echelons of Trump's administration. It's leaving no stone unturned in a pursuit of information about both the lead-up to the riots and machinations to prevent the certification of the vote results.
And the pro-Trump narrative comes from Federalist. This unlawful committee is attempting to violate Mastriano's fundamental constitutional rights, including his rights to free speech and public assembly, as well as his right to record the panel's interrogation to prevent it from using his words out of context as a political weapon. The committee continues to be just a tool to demonize Trump and his supporters. Eric, you know what I've noticed in that all these last few stories that we've had about the ex-president Trump, the spins are all pro-Trump and then the Democrats. There's no Republican spin. What do you think about that?
That, you know what? I noticed the same thing. There's a trend there. It seems like he's kind of a lone wolf.
He is a lone wolf. But I also think that we might be slowly seeing a third party creeping into our system.
The Trump party?
Well, what do you think they'd call themselves? Something like the Super Trumpers.
Super Trump. It'd be like the 70s group Super Trump.
Like Super Tramp?
Yeah. And news from the White House is Biden signs a bill to boost microchip production. And here are the facts as agreed upon by Reuters, CNBC, NPR Online News, and Fox News. On Tuesday, U.S. President Biden signed a landmark bill to provide $52.7 billion in subsidies to semiconductor protection and research to make the U.S. more competitive in the field against China. With bipartisan support, the CHIPS and Science Act was passed by lawmakers in late July. The legislation also provides $10 billion to invest in regional technology hubs, a 25% investment tax credit for manufacturing expenses, and authorizes roughly $100 billion in spending over 5 years on scientific research. According to the White House, multiple companies, spurred by the bill, have announced more than $44 billion in new semiconductor manufacturing investments. Advocates say the funding is needed to improve America's technological edge and energize its chip industry. The U.S. produces about 10% of the world supply of semiconductors, while East Asia accounts for 75%. Some prominent Republican lawmakers, however, have criticized the bill, which is not funded by tax hikes or spending cuts, as a further risk to inflation and a corporate handout lacking in transparency.
Eric, thanks for sharing the facts about that story. Here's the narrative spinning out from that. The first is the anti-China narrative, and that's provided by Fox News. While the U.S. continues to lead in the design of cutting-edge and essential semiconductors, it has become overly reliant upon foreign manufacturers, especially those in China and in Taiwan, which are subject to constant threats of PRC aggression. This bill is a crucial first step to the long overdue process of decoupling the U.S. economy from China.
Thank you, Adam. Global Times is giving us the pro-China narrative. The CHIPS and Science Act, a bill intended to try and constrain China's inevitable rise as a global tech power, is too little too late as the U.S., the world's largest economy, continues to suffer from industrial hollowing out, mounting debt, and runaway inflation. The bill effectively asks companies to choose China or the U.S., and the U.S. is not going to like the answer.
And a report from the U.S. Department of Justice, they're preparing an antitrust lawsuit against Google. And here are the facts as agreed upon by Bloomberg, CNET, Finance, Wall Street Journal, and the New York Post. The U.S. Department of Justice, or the DOJ, is reportedly expected to file an antitrust lawsuit against Alphabet Inc.'s Google in the coming weeks over its dominance in the online advertising market. The DOJ has allegedly been investigating Google's ad tech practices since 2019 and has recently expedited the inquiry, with sources familiar with the matter saying the newest suit could come as soon as next month. This would mark the DOJ's second case against Google following a lawsuit filed in 2020 for unlawfully maintaining monopolies in the markets for general search services, search advertising, and general search text advertising in the U.S. In July, Google reportedly offered to split parts of its business that deals with ads into a separate company under the Alphabet umbrella, though officials have indicated the DOJ is seeking deep structural changes to the ad tech business. Doa Meki, the DOJ official expected to head the case, said in April that the agency will be uncompromising in future antitrust cases and that they are not planning to take settlements. Google is also facing antitrust investigations from the EU and UK, as well as a lawsuit filed by the state of Texas and a proposed law by U.S. senators to divest parts of the ad tech business.
Thank you, Adam, for the facts from that story. We've got several spins that have emerged and the pro-establishment narrative coming from the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Google is using its market power to crush competition and impede innovation. For far too long, big tech companies have had vast amounts of unchecked power and influence. Even if this lawsuit is unsuccessful, it's still a step in the right direction toward challenging the power of big tech.
And then there's also an establishment critical narrative, and that's provided by Washington Post. Although Google dominates web search-based ads, it doesn't have a monopoly on the digital ad market. It actually faces stiff competition from other tech firms. To meaningfully increase competition, as the DOJ seemingly seeks to do, Google would have to be broken into fragments, which would hinder technology and inconvenience users.
And we've got a nerd narrative. There's a 50% chance that Google will be supplanted as the top search engine in the U.S. by market share by 2056, according to the Metaculous prediction community.
Eric, do you remember way back when we were kids and they were splitting up Ma Bell? Remember when that happened?
I do remember that, yes.
Yeah, and they said that when the whole phone system was just going to, it was going to fall apart. It was going to crash. You're going to look what happened now.
I know.
I don't think Google has anything to worry about.
Nope. A grand jury declines to indict a woman in Emmett Till's murder. And here are the facts, as agreed upon by Axios, Fox 32 Chicago, New York Times, CNN, and Guardian. A Mississippi grand jury declined to indict 87-year-old Carolyn Bryant Donham, a white woman who accused Emmett Till, a black 14-year-old, of harassing her in 1955. The allegation ultimately led to his abduction and lynching. In a Tuesday news release, LaFleur County DA Dwayne Richardson announced that after hearing more than 7 hours of testimony from investigators and witnesses, the grand jury last week determined that there was insufficient evidence to indict Donham. As time has passed, legal avenues for the pursuit of Donham or anyone else involved in Till's murder have dwindled. However, there have been multiple attempts to seek charges in the past 2 decades as new evidence has emerged. In recent months, it has been revealed that an arrest warrant for Donham, her late husband Roy Bryant, and his brother J.W. Milam, dated August 1955, went unserved. The warrant contained a note stating that Donham couldn't be located at the time. Bryant and Milam later admitted to the killing in a 1956 magazine interview, but weren't charged. Donham's unpublished memoir was also recently unearthed, in which she said that her husband and his brother brought Till to her for identification, and she had tried to help the victim by denying he was the boy responsible. Till's lynching was a catalyst in the American civil rights movement of the 20th century. His mother chose to hold an open casket funeral, from which photos were publicized nationally to show the brutality of his murder. The legacy of Emmett Till was cemented in March when Biden signed the Emmett Till Anti-Lynching Act, making hanging or lynching a federal hate crime.
Eric, thank you very much for laying out the sad facts of that story. We've got a few narratives wrapping up our podcast today. The left narrative is provided by the Daily Cause. The fact that Donham, after nearly 70 years, has still not been held accountable for her lies is a disgrace. Though she may be old, she was able to live out her entire life with freedom, unlike Emmett Till, whose life was taken from him when he was only 14 years old. This is just another example of how systemic anti-black systems persist in America.
Thank you, Adam. The right narrative is coming from Daily Wire. Justice has been done. The DOJ investigated every element and found that Donham did not lie about the original case. The statute of limitations has also run out on all potential federal crimes that could apply to Till's abduction. Although Till's death was a horrific injustice, there is no legal or just way Donham could have been charged over the terrible events surrounding it. Thanks for listening to the Improve the News podcast for Thursday, August 11th, 2022.
Each day, we use machine learning to read about 5,000 articles from about 100 newspapers and figure out which ones are about the same stories. For each major story, our editorial team then extracts both the key facts that all articles agree on and the key narratives where the articles differ.
For more information on Improve the News, please visit our website, improvethenews.org. You can also download the Improve the News app on the Apple App Store or Google Play. For Adam Clark, I'm Eric Steiner, inviting you to join us next time on Improve the News.